Hello, everyone, and welcome to the ASM InfoBot podcast. In this episode, we are going to discuss the priorities of the Poland's presidency of the Council of the European Union and the agenda for the engagement with Asian countries. Today, we are going to focus on the Council of the European Union and looking specifically into the role of the rotating presidency of the Council of the European Union and to look into the priorities of the current presidency held by Poland. We're very delighted today to have with us three speakers that will help us understand all these issues and what we hope to see during the 6 months EU's Polish presidency. We have with us Ambassador Vito Sapku, Poland's Ministry of Foreign Affairs Special Envoy to the Indo-Pacific. We have Professor Dr. E.V. Fitriani, Professor of International Relations at the University of Indonesia, and Dr. Sven Bisko, Professor at Ghent University and the Edmund Institute. So welcome, everyone. Thank you for participating in this podcast. Now, I would like to, of course, invite Ambassador Vito to share with us, since you are the special envoy on Indo-Pacific and you are deeply involved in the whole preparation of the Polish presidency.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I'm honored and delighted to participate in this podcast and say a few words about priorities of Poland's foreign policy and especially the presidency. As you have said, will last for 6 months. As you know, this is a rotating presidency and our second presidency because we joined the European Union on the 1st of May 2004. And as we have 27 countries of the EU, every country's turn comes every 13 and a half years. The motto of the Polish presidency is security, security first. And we speak about seven dimensions of security. One is defense and security. Another one is protection of people and borders. Another dimension is resistance to foreign interference and disinformation, very important now. Then we have ensuring security and freedom of business. Another one is the energy transition, security, energy security in general, then competitive and resilient agriculture and health security. This is the seventh dimension. And the principles behind the Polish presidency are cooperate where possible, compete where needed, confront when necessary, and use opportunities and minimize threats. Of course, this is to secure our fundamental interests. And when it comes to the Indo-Pacific, and especially ASEAN and the countries of ASEAN, we can see this interconnectedness between Europe and Asia. This interconnectedness between stability, prosperity, and security in the Indo-Pacific, because whatever happens in Europe has consequences in the Indo-Pacific, and whatever happens in the Indo-Pacific has consequences in Europe, geopolitical environment. It is interest of Europe and also on the Indo-Pacific to cooperate as much as we can, believing in the rules-based order, the UN Charter, international law, etc.
Now I turn to Evie. You have heard what Ambassador said about the seven dimensions of security. And then we know you have been keen observer of EU-Asia relations and the ASEM process. So I was wondering, how would you, if you look at these seven dimensions of security, where do you see the closest engagement that we could have in terms of engagement, EU and Asia engagement, and particularly on EU and ASEAN?
The EU has been an active player in Asia-Pacific region, and it is also an important dialogue partner of ASEAN. So we hope you will continue to closely with Indonesia and other ASEAN countries during the Polish presidency and also in the future. I agree with Ambassador that we place security and stability very importantly, because we believe that without stability, it will be difficult to develop and to get prosper. I personally hope that the Indo-Pacific Minister Forum Poland will do later, and also with this different dimension of the security that Poland will focus on, we'll focus more on the cooperative strategies rather than involved in geopolitics or the political matters in the region. And of these seven dimensions that you mentioned before, Ambassador, I would like to see it to be taken in a more inclusive way. I also think there should be there have been a lot of connection and platform between EU and ASEAN, but hopefully under the Polish presidency, we could see a clearer and more realistic program that the EU and ASEAN can cooperate to enhance their relation. Not only on the track one, government to government, and maybe the security dimension that you mentioned closely related to government, but at least there's also another one that you mentioned, number two, if I'm not mistaken, protection of people. So we hope the cooperation also for non-governmental tracks, so people to people.
I was wondering with Trump, with his tariffs and the disruptions that the U.S. is now posing to the global trading order, based on its recent actions, what do you think EU and Asia can do in terms of trying to mitigate the potential adverse impact of U.S. policy on the global trading order, and in order that the region, our two regions, will continue to focus on economic growth, economic development for our people?
Well, since the establishment of ASEAN, Asia-Europe meeting in 1996, there has been an idea to strengthen Asia and European legs. Yeah, if you see this triangle, United States, Asia, and Europe, the leg of Asia and US is quite strong, and then the leg between EU and US are also very stable and strong through NATO and also an other mechanism. But the leg between Europe and Asia was not as strong as we expected. So perhaps with American unilateralism under Trump 2.0, which is quite very make Americans different from other, maybe this is the strongest drive for us to reorientate again, to revitalize this Asia and Europe legs. And perhaps it is time also to restructure global or regional supply chain through the improvement of trade and investment between Asia and Europe. So maybe it is an opportunity for ASEAN and EU then to reorientate our relations. The obstacle that can be in this effort is just like previous experience. It can be lack of trust and confidence from both sides. This is why I think it's important for the two sides to keep dialogue mechanism, because this kind of lack of trust and lack of confidence has become the obstacle in the previous time.
Sven, you write a lot on security issues in the EU. You have written a lot about grand strategy and written a lot on the security and defense policy. So what do you think should be done during these 6 months to concentrate minds on some of the key priorities for the European Union?
Thank you. Well, I think the minds have been concentrated definitely by everything we heard from the Trump administration since the Munich Security Conference. And what we clearly need now is very fast decisions from Europe. Because the Trump administration basically created a fait accompli. You know, they just announced we will negotiate with Russia without you. We will not allow Ukraine into NATO. We will not participate in a security guarantee to Ukraine, nor will we allow NATO to be involved. So the question is, yeah, what does Europe do? Do we accept that? Or do we say, well, two can play that game, and Europeans could actually come together and in consultation with Ukraine also create facts that will have an influence on the negotiations, even if we're not invited. Europe can say now, we will continue the accession process. We will maintain sanctions against Russia. Trump cannot negotiate away our sanctions. And we can say now, if we want to, that the day there is a ceasefire, we will deploy 50,000 troops on Ukrainian territory to guarantee its security. Now, what I fear is that this sort of decisions will not be taken, you know, by 27 in the Council or 32 in the North Atlantic Council at NATO. So you need a small group format. I think that's the only way forward. And I think President Tusk met with President Macron and a number of other leaders earlier this week. We're sort of improvising, of course, in a way. We're looking for the right format, but this is the way to go ahead. So I very much hope that Poland in the presidency will help will play a decisive role and will help the Europeans to take the decisions that either we now quickly take or others will decide for us.
Ambassador, would you like to elaborate on what has been done, for instance, after or in terms of, you know, when you heard what has gone on in the Munich Security Council that encompasses many areas? Would the defense security become the main focus for the next few months?
The fact that we had prepared those priorities before the Munich conference show that Poland had always attached much importance to all the aspects of security. When we talk about Ukraine, Poland is united, and I think the EU is united in our support for Ukraine, because it was an unprovoked, unjustified aggression on the part of Russia. And we believe in national sovereignty, in the UN Charter, principles of international law. Each country, including Ukraine, can choose its path. If they want to join the European Union or if they want to join NATO, this is the sovereign decision, and no other country can impose another country sovereign decisions. So Ukraine will decide if it wants to join the European Union or NATO. When it comes to the EU accession, we are working on it. We have invited Ukraine to negotiate their accession, and they will be welcome. We don't want to create any precedents that a superpower in another country can decide on behalf of a sovereign country what to do and how to approach its own path of development and security. So we are united. We know that if Ukraine loses, we lose. All of us are going to lose, because the events can be replicated in other parts of the world. So we have regional superpowers, and if we let Russia decide on what to do with Ukraine and decide if it should exist or not, other countries in other parts of the world can do the same vis-a-vis smaller countries.
Thank you, Ambassador. With so much on your plate, would there be an Indo-Pacific ministerial forum during the next few months that Poland will be committed to organize?
The ministerial format is going to happen, we hope, this year, but in the second half of the year. So it will be the Danish presidency, and there will probably be a meeting of the ministers in December. So it's the ministerial plus bilateral meetings and plus some side events that may happen in Brussels this time during the Danish presidency.
Thank you. Sven, if Indo-Pacific Ministerial Forum, what do you hope to see in terms of how the EU should be engaging the Indo-Pacific. What do you think, you know, of recent years, we have here the we have looked at the EU's Indo-Pacific strategy. The Germans have its Indo-Pacific strategy. There's a lot of talk about having a much more prominent security role in the Indo-Pacific. Is this realistic, looking at what is happening in Europe now? Or do you think that there should be other kind of focus in terms of how the EU should be engaging the Indo-Pacific?
To be honest, I'm a little bit skeptical about the European security role in the Indo-Pacific, certainly a military role, and because the reality is that our forces are hardly sufficient to secure the neighborhood of Europe, right? If you look at the Houthis, who have effectively cut off the Red Sea, and we are struggling to find sufficient naval capacity to deal with that, and de facto, all shipping has now been sent around around South Africa, and we just live with the fact. So in military terms, my feeling is that the priority for Europe, in addition, it starts, of course, with the territorial defense of Europe itself. Then the priority should be the broad area around Europe that has to be kept stable for Europe itself to be kept stable. And that includes the Caucasus, North Africa, but also the entire Middle East and the Gulf and the Western Indian Ocean. But I think, you know, the eastern part of our sea line of communication to Asia, so the Eastern Indian Ocean, the South China Sea, the East China Sea, I don't think we have the military capacity to play a leading role there. Moreover, there is no direct military threat to our trade there. The threat there is indirect. What I do think is possible, you know, in a very hypothetical scenario, that is in case of war in Asia, a war involving the US and China, Europe will undoubtedly be sucked into that. And then the military role that Europe can play, if it decides to play a role, is indeed to guard the shipping lane, but also to cut off the shipping lane, to stop provisions of natural resources going from the Middle East to Asia, if that is the role that we seek to play.
Thank you. Evie, when it comes to a security role of the EU, as Sven has expressed some doubts of the military dimension, but there are many aspects that I think the EU can work with Asia in terms of other parts, you know, economic security, energy security, food security, and all that. So what would be your wish list if you see that there is going to be the Indo-Pacific Ministerial Forum? What should be the sort of focus and attention? Where should attention be focused on when it comes to security?
First, I would like to express my agreement to Sven that we also in Asia see that EU will be too busy to stabilize the eastern part of EU that won't be able to participate directly militarily in other parts of the world, including especially in Asia Pacific or in the Pacific, which is the area quite far away from EU. But respond to our question about what we can expect is actually EU also have different type of power that we consider is very strong, which is, for example, in energy transition. So like energy security is one issue that I think EU should highlight and under the Polish presidency, if possible, to highlight this aspect, right? Energy security that EU has been the leading in this sector, including the technology, whereas in Southeast Asia and also in the Pacific, this kind of aspect is still mute between geopolitical issue and the real energy issue and also the economic issue. Maybe in terms of environmental protection, EU have these norms and this technology, but maybe EU need also to change the approach. We don't expect disputes with EU, for example, like Indonesia. We don't expect disputes with EU on an environment or environment issue, but we expect to have more collaboration. Okay, there's some a lot of problem because like in any other third world countries or global south, Indonesia is struggling to be balanced between development and conservation. you with the technology and lack of know-how, I think should play a more constructive way rather than bring dispute on the plate to when it comes to the environment in the Pacific areas.
I suppose you are referring to some of the EU regulations and directives that might have some sort of impact on Asian countries, which was in some way, I think one of the EU deforestation regulation, for instance, they have been facing some pushback, and there's a concern that sometimes in coming up with this kind of regulations and directives, the EU does not consult enough before deciding to go ahead with this with the legislation. So, Ambassador, I think in the EU Indo-Pacific strategy, there's a lot of discussions about the term connectivity. And this connectivity agenda has also been actually in the Asia-Europe meeting ASEM agenda for quite some years before now, because of the situation in Ukraine. We have not had a high-level official ASEM meetings for some time. But I think the connectivity agenda remains very important. You could perhaps share with us what are some of the thinking behind the Polish presidency on how to take this agenda forward.
Yes, connectivity is one of the most important topics for us. And we have also, in our thinking, divided this connectivity into several subsections. For example, energy connectivity, which has been mentioned, and I fully agree. It's, for example, the integration of electricity infrastructure or working in the EU-ASEAN framework as we have this dialogue on energy. It's for us, for example, the implementation of the Comprehensive Air Transport Agreement that exists between EU and ASEAN, but transport in general. Another type of connectivity, trade and economic connectivity, which means sustainable value chains, improved environment for fair trade and investment. This is obvious that we should be interested in this. Another type of connectivity, digital connectivity, trusted, secure submarine connections, for example. We saw what had happened with cables, underwater cables, and also in Asia. This is as important as for Europe. And the last type of connectivity is higher education and people-to-people connectivity. Students, academic mobility, university networks, etc. So I agree that trust is important and concrete projects are important. We just must turn words into deeds, because deeds are important.
Thank you for the very positive note on connectivity and how we can work much more concretely and turn, as you said, words into deeds. Sven, you have something to add to this discussion on connectivity?
Yes, indeed. We are also, as Egemon, together with colleagues involved in the Global Gateway and the organization of the Global Gateway Forum. And then our angle is specifically the security of connectivity. And I think the point that the EU has to make is that this is a global public good. And we've seen that. I mentioned already the Houthis cutting off maritime shipping through the Red Sea. And of course, China, for example, pretended, well, this was not their problem, because they say, well, the Houthis have agreed not to target Chinese ships. And I said, well, but Chinese goods are not only transported on Chinese ships. So actually, if that shipping lane is cut, it's everybody's problem in Asia and in Europe. So I think this is a very important message from Europe. The security of connectivity is a global public good. And if it is cut anywhere, it's not just a problem for Europeans to solve. It's a problem for all whose trade is involved. And it also, there are also specific European problems, of course, in the Baltic Sea, where you have seen Russia and probably also China involved in sabotage, also of cables and so on and so forth. So I think this is a pressing issue, but it seems to me to be really one on which one could mobilize a lot of states that all have an interest in uninterrupted trade, in uninterrupted data traffic, and so on and so forth. So it's a positive project that we can pursue together, including with partners in the Asia Pacific.
Thank you. Evie, as an educator, you have been in the forefront of trying to build people-to-people's connectivity. Do you perhaps share with us what you hope to see in terms of people-to-people connectivity and how you see the role of ASEF, the Asia-Europe Foundation, in this area?
Thank you, Levy. This is the area that I really would like to talk more, especially with Ambassador Wintour as a representative of Polish government, because I think this is the area that needs to be more supported from both sides, Asia and Europe, because the future is belong to the young generation, right? And it will be difficult for them to cooperate if they don't even meet and understand each other. So I think through education and more exchange of students, make them meet and make them talk and make them cooperate, I think it's very important. Laimi and I organized 3 consecutive years of summer course that we make students from Asia and Europe to talk and to be in a one class and learn together. This is the area is not high politics, so it should be much easier to do this kind of stuff rather than more sensitive and strategic. And it is not too much bureaucracy because all university, and there's already connection between Asia and European university, right? There are already institutions for that. And ASEF, I think this is where ASEF can also play a very important role, not only to connect the universe and university, but also to connect young people, more than young people, even ASEF can connect also artists and any other parts of the society, non-governmental aspect. So I really hope there will be more support, especially to ASEF, so ASEF can have more activities.
On ASEF, I would like to say just a few words, since we have the Polish executive director of ASEF. We are planning in Warsaw a new project. It's a kind of Asia-Europe diplomatic academy. I mean, it's not a diplomatic academy, but we want to invite students, mostly diplomats, I would say, from the different ministries of Asian countries and European countries. So in ASEF, we will have projects that we support in 7 key areas: in culture, in education, in economy, in governance, in the media, in sustainable development, and in public health. About 25 projects a year with a lot of partner organizations.
So thank you very much for that kind sharing and also telling us more about how the EU works with its agenda. And thank you for all the speakers. Fan, thank you so much for your very candid and very frank assessment of where the relationship is and what the EU should be focusing on. And of course, Evie, for your contribution to the discussion and your commitment to the people-to-people connectivity on your part as a lecturer. I know you have been very supportive of this collaboration at the people-to-people's level. So thank you very much to all of you, and goodbye.
This podcast was produced by the ASEF Communications Department. Stay tuned for our next episode in June.